This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMV Reed. My first series collection is out. The first three books of The Storm Below are gathered in one awesome bundle. When Ari and Shailene are drafted into the Autonomy's Navy, their love is stressed to the breaking. Assassins, dark gods, and the demonic Storm Riders are all they hold dear. You can get the Storm Below books 1 through 3 collection on Amazon, and it's free to read for Kindle Unlimited subscribers. Today, I'm joined by Christiane Joy Allison. She is the author of the science fiction book Infinitus, The Infinite Saga Book 1.
How are you doing today, Christiane?
Doing all right. Excited to talk today.
Awesome, awesome. So I would like to start things out with some fun questions. So what's your favorite time of day to write?
The middle of the night. I am one of those people that does not do well in the morning. I'm not a morning person. And it never seems to fail that when I'm trying to go to sleep, my mind just runs wild with all the things that I need to add to my story. So I actually am very productive at night.
Okay, that's cool. And what is your favorite genre of books to read?
My favorite genre, I'm one of those people that reads just about anything as long as there's really exciting relationship dynamics between the characters going along in the story. So I like suspense, I like thrillers, I like romance and sci-fi and fantasy, but the character's got to hook me. It doesn't matter what it is. The character's got to hook me, and they've got to have really great interpersonal stuff going on in the story, and that's what I really want to read.
Okay, cool. And how long have you wanted to be a writer, Christiane?
So I've wanted to be a writer since I was little, and I know that's pretty common. What really threw me into it was much later, after I had done some early workshops and writing groups and whatnot through secondary school and then in college a little bit. And then I went into the professional realm and I started working for the state government, and there was no room for that. And so I did that for quite a few years until finally, when I was in the middle of working on my master's degree, I kind of had this like block where I had not done something creative in long enough that I just could not keep going with my studies or with anything else. And so I took a break from my master's degree, and I just decided I'm going to write a story. I have to get something out. And so I wrote about 64 chapters in 2.5 months. It just kind of exploded. And then it was like this bottleneck had released, and I realized like everything was so much easier to do, and it was so much easier to just complete the rest of my studies and keep going with my work. And then for myself, when I really transitioned into professional writing was when my disability became so severe that I could no longer work my regular job for the state. But I realized that no matter how ill I felt or how I was doing on any given day, as long as I can speak, I can still write. I can still create my stories and still, you know, put those things out there. And so writing kind of gives me wings in a way. And that's what I really love about it. And that's when I really got started.
So you mentioned as long as you can speak, do you use like Dragon or another voice to text device?
Yeah, so I frequently just regular type, but you know, if I'm doing something else and I need to get something out fast and I don't have access to my hands, I'll just pull Dragon up and just start talking it out. And it's great because it'll capture so much. And then, you know, I can go back and make whatever changes I need to, but I don't lose what I've got in that moment.
Yeah, no, I've used Dragon before, and I remember, like, I was using it kind of regularly just to kind of keep in practice with it, just in case something, like, happened. But I kind of just got annoyed with the error percentage of it. But yeah. I do remember I was doing my first, like, live read or, you know, interview or something talking about myself back in April. And it kept feeling like I was doing Dragon, and I kept, like, saying, like, period and comma in my sentence, and
right,
you gotta, and yeah, so that was That took me like a, and so it's not something I would do in a normal conversation, but like just speaking off into a microphone to like myself, kind of, it made me, it tricked my brain into thinking I was narrating like prose and having to put in all the punctuation and think of it that way.
Absolutely. You kind of have to think in, you have to kind of think in punctuation. And one of the things that I used to do is, you know, with Dragon, you can record audio and then it'll create the written file from your audio. So I used to, on my commute, I used to have a really long commute over an hour and 15 minutes on a good day. And I would just turn on my recorder in my car and just start talking to myself. And I would talk the whole drive in and the whole drive out. And I'd get so much writing done.
Yeah, I knew a woman who did that. And she was like, I said, like, yeah, I tried to do it, but my engine noise was too loud. Like, it was drowning out my words, and I couldn't get good. Like, it was missing too much. She's like, oh, yeah, well, I have an electric car. I'm like, yeah, that would do it. That would make it easy.
That would do it.
So let's talk about your book. You have a book called Infinitus. Infinitus. Okay. And this seems to be taking place in a sort of post-scarcity world where, like, everyone has everything they want and need. But to have this, you have to link your mind to a computer called Grid, which kind of makes this all possible. I was wondering if you'd like to talk about the setting, the characters, and what makes it so interesting.
Yeah, so with Infinitus, the world, as you said, is kind of, it's run under a one-world government called the Global Fellowship, and that government provides all of the basic daily needs of the population, and also most of the population for work is assigned to what they call server duty, which is where you go to a local server bank and you connect your brain to the computer system, and the computer system that runs the world actually functions by using the brains of the population as temporary servers. And so they discovered at some point that, you know, the world's largest supercomputer really is the human brain, and it's, you know, so much easier to maintain and requires so much less resources and everything else that it just transitioned into that. But there are portions of the population that are not okay with this or don't want to be part of that society for one reason or another. And my main character, Gina Mallory, she is what is known as a shirker in the future. Shirker is kind of a slang term used by the population, the rest of the population, but they are basically the homeless population of the future because none of those needs are being provided for them. They're not receiving housing or food or clothing or any of the basic day-to-day stuff that they would require. They have to find those things on their own and live kind of outside of those typical, the rest of the global society. And so she has done that most of her life for two reasons. One, because her family has maintained a faith that is no longer practiced worldwide. And the second is that she has a genetic disability that, if discovered, she's afraid of the repercussions of that, of whether the Global Fellowship and that government would take care of her by institutionalizing her or taking her, you know, choices away from her. So she starts out kind of on the outside looking in.
Okay. And where does the story for her go from there? Is it just about her trying to survive, or does she have other goals?
So initially she's just trying to survive. She's very much alone. Her parents have passed away. Her brother has disappeared. There is a prelude to the novel that is a story about her brother, Arthur, and it's called The Global Fellowship. But starting from this point in Infinitus, she is just kind of alone by herself trying to maintain. But an incident occurs that injures her and causes her to actually be taken into that Global Fellowship intake process and to start living that life. But she's hiding what she is and trying to survive while not letting anybody know what her genetic condition is.
Okay. So where did the idea for the story come from?
So the story just kind of landed on me. Most of my stories do. I was commuting to work one day, and it was like the one of the climax points in the story just kind of landed on me, and I was looking at it and kind of taking it apart and seeing where it would go. And you know, on in this story, she very much ends up on the run and kind of trying to survive in this world where everything is set against her. But the elements of her illness and everything else kind of came much later in the story and enhanced the story and changed where it was going. Because the illness that she has is called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It's a connective tissue disorder that's genetic. And essentially, it's the same condition that I have. So when you read this story, it's written in a way that causes you to kind of see the world from the perspective of somebody that's living with that condition and struggling with it. And just kind of seeing that experience firsthand instead of, you know, just kind of reading about it in general terms or saying, you know, well, people experience these symptoms. You're actually watching somebody struggle and deal with all of the different complications that come up with that illness as they go. And so that came into the story very much later, because I remember I was with my mother and I was complaining one day that, you know, well, nobody understands what it's like to live in a body like this. And she looked at me and she said, you know, well, nobody's written it, have they? And I went, oh, thank you. Oh, you're right. And so I looked at it and I said, you know what? I want to explore this. I want to see where this goes with my character having the same kinds of struggles that I do and that I know countless other people do around the world. And it really just kind of bloomed into something amazing.
Cool. So other than your own real life experience with friends, there's nothing else in the book that was sort of inspired. I mean, you sort of have like a one world government. You have some sort of supercomputer network. All very interesting ideas. I'm just curious how it all came about.
So there's a lot of elements that just came from various things that I love. The supercomputer element and all of that really came from just my work and my experience with technology. I used to run an online career information system for the state of Alaska. And so I was integrated in technology all the time and working on, you know, adapting it and enhancing it and communicating with users about how to improve it. And so I kind of lived and breathed technology for several years. And was always on the cutting edge of looking at, you know, what's coming out and what are the applications for it and how is it going to affect kids and their school and everything else. And then I've always personally loved stories that have characters that have animal traits or animal characteristics. And in my world, there's a whole population that's living in the world kind of hidden, that are called chimeras. And so they have animal genetics that are woven into their DNA from old world super soldier programs. And so it's not experimentation that's going on anymore. Okay. It's experimentation that happened in the past. And then over time, those people, you know, having children and grandchildren and whatnot, those genes still resurface. And when they resurface suddenly, you'll have somebody with animal traits or characteristics, and they're called a chimera. And they're kind of taught to the rest of the population as like the boogeyman of society. But that same society is also using those people as operatives for the different advantages that they have and kind of exploiting them. And so one of the main characters in the story, his name is Hawk. He's a chimera, but he's one that's more he's harder to identify because he's not visually obvious. But he has a lot of enhancements that you don't necessarily see on the surface.
Okay, cool. I was wondering if you'd ever read the Hyperion Cantos by Dan Simmons.
No, I have not.
Okay. There's like a giant AI network, and they have like a system where you can travel like anywhere across the galaxy through these like portals, and you just like step in and then you step out on the other side, like instantaneous. But for like that fraction of a second you're going through this no space, you're actually being used by the AI as their like processors. And so they have like trillions of people every second are using their travel network across the galaxy, and they use it all for they're illicitly using it all for their processing power without anyone know. And it doesn't do anything to humans. Like, you just step on the other side and you don't even know your brain was hijacked for like a nanosecond.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the technology for me was really inspired by different scientific articles that I was reading. and just things that came up over time, because the core concept of the technology in my book is that it was the bridging of the study between the study of the human brain and learning how the brain is actually relaying activity and communicating itself and all of its processes, and then linking that with buckyball technology and the ability to build like nanotubes and different structures out of carbon. And in my story, it comes from the carbon from your own body and from, you know, everything else that you've got going on internally. And I know like previous stories, like you think the Matrix they have where, you know, you plug this huge thing into the back of your brain or, you know, kind of stuff like that. It's hardware based. But everything in my book is actually wetware based. So it's actually grown onto the surface of the brain with your own carbon and with your own internal systems through an injection. And you never have any kind of hardware installed. It's all wireless and it all communicates without any of that, you know, old dangerous cutting you open and putting things inside. You know, that's very much old world technology that was, you know, barbaric.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's some good stuff with that, though, with the direct, like, access to the nervous system. But, yeah, no, they are, because they're experimenting with stuff where they're just reinterpreting, like, electrical signals across the brain and just attaching, you know, sensors to your head and stuff to control things, you know, for, like, in prosthetics research and stuff to try to get people's, like, artificial limbs to move with their thoughts. But there's no, like, physical connection they're establishing.
Yeah, exactly. So... and, you know, as far as the brain power goes, like we have been able successfully to recreate, I believe it was like 1.5 seconds of actual brain neuroactivity. But it took a supercomputer called the K to do it. And, you know, to power the K requires like the same amount of power that you would use to power a small country. So the brain is much, much more efficient than anything that we have today.
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to, they're hoping that quantum computing will be the crack to it, but you still need quite a lot of power to run it. I think I read like something like it'd be like if you had like a quantum computer like the size of the moon, you could simulate the entire universe. But that's a lot of space, and I don't know how you power something that big. Like that's just the computing room. You still need to get the power into there somehow.
Exactly. Whereas, like, you know, the human brain requires, like, the same power as an LED light bulb.
Yeah, yeah. So, did you have a... Were there any challenges in writing it? Like, any unexpected snags or anything like that?
Yeah, so I am a pantser. I am a person that writes, you know, by the seat of my pants. I don't outline. I don't do well with any of that. I experience the story that kind of similar to the way the reader does as I'm going through it. My characters surprise me all the time, and things veer off in different directions, and I go like, wow, okay, now I have to figure out how to deal with what you just did. But for me, one of the bigger challenges was that I'm writing the story in first-person present tense to make it very real, very tangible, again, so that you're experiencing more of what that, you know, person with that illness or with those enhancements is experiencing. But the difficulty with that is that you can't see what's happening I can't see what's happening without writing it, but I'm writing from the perspective of these two characters. And so I found myself writing several scenes and different things in the story from other characters' perspectives that would never be published, just so that I could see what was happening behind the scenes and what all of the other background characters were doing to drive the story forward. So that was kind of an interesting experiment.
Okay. Yeah, that does that's not a bad way to sort of handle exactly what the people are screening. Because, yeah, I know, you know, I write, like, limited third-person POVs, and so, you know, it can be hard sometimes to, like, I have to, like, if I want to something to happen that characters be in the book, I kind of have to figure out a way to get a POV character around there or something.
Right.
Yeah, the book I'm writing now, I had to add a POV just because I needed one more character who can sort of be there to witness some important stuff, but wouldn't really have the ability to greatly affect the outcome. Like, if I had one of my other POV characters, I think they would shift things around too much. But this one's kind of a young guy. He's like training and learning. So that's kind of his, he's sort of growing. So it worked well to have him be that character, because he's not the experienced one. He's the inexperienced one. So he could not have much effect. Some effect, right? He does some stuff, but not enough to change like the outcome of these events, really, in a way that would affect the story flow. But right. It would be the only way to show it off, right? Because
exactly.
Yeah, no, it was so that's just some of the challenges, yeah. Yeah. But what is next for you in your writing career?
So I am continuing on with this series. The Infinitus is book one of the Infinitus saga, and then there is the prelude that kind of leads into it. But it is the first main novel. I do expect the series to have at least 4 novels. I'm currently working on the second one. I'm most of the way through the first draft on that one. But you know how the first drafts go. You got to completely tear them apart and then put them back together. So I'm working on that process now and just seeing where Gina and Hawk's story continues to go through the next book.
Okay. Cool. And where can our listeners find you on the internet?
So you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I also have my website at allisonpublishing.com. And so I'm all over the place, and, you know, I absolutely love to hear from readers. It's one of my favorite things. And so, you know, if you're interested in my stuff, you can drop me a line. You can look at what else I've got out there. I also, in my writing, have a series of children's picture books. That I'm putting out that are very niche. They're for children who are impacted by the criminal justice system. And so the first one was actually the first children's picture book in the world, to my knowledge, ever written on the subject of wrongful conviction for young children who are going through one. And then the sequel to it is for children who are going through a prison visitation experience or going to be going through one. And so they kind of give children hope in those situations, despite, you know, what they're having to live through, and provides a resource. So if anybody knows any kids that are going through that situation, I just try to always let people know that those are out there as well. But I'm definitely very...
Yeah, it's I had to visit my dad in jail before, so when I was a teenager. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, having it's a weird experience.
But he was only in... He was only in for a month, though, so...
Oh, yeah, so that's a much less, shorter separation, at least. You know, I've heard back from several folks that have, you know, parents or whatnot who are wrongfully convicted or who are just convicted for much longer periods of time. And depending on the age of the kiddos, that's why I specifically created them as children's picture books, because kids don't have the same fears that we do. You know, with us, you know, and when you're older, you go in there and you're like, oh, there's, you know, these scary people in here, or there's these rules and there's all this stuff. But to a child, it's like that metal detector is huge and it beeps and it scares me. Like, you know, what is that thing? Like, they have completely different questions and different fears. And if you can address those up front and just kind of let them know what to expect before they go in, then they're going to have a much more positive experience. And that's good for the kids, and it's good for the parents or the loved ones or, you know, everybody involved. So.
All right. Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, thank you for chatting with me, Christiane.
No problem.
I hope you have a great day.
You too, very much. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.